Angus at Work, a podcast for the profit-minded cattleman. Brought to you by the Angus Beef Bulletin, we have news and information on health, nutrition, marketing, genetics, and management. So, let's get to work, shall we? Hello, and welcome back to Angus at Work. You may have heard the saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Whether through genetics, management, or vaccination, preventing bovine respiratory disease concerns in your herd should be at the top of most producers' to-do lists. I'm Lindsay McAnally, and on today's episode, you'll hear more from Shauna Hermel from CattleCon 2024, where she sat down with our guest, D.L. Stepp of Boehringer Ingelheim, to discuss his top tips for managing your herd and feeder calves to prevent disease issues. So let's dive in.
I know here at the NCBA trade show and looking at a lot of the companies, BRD is a huge concern this year throughout the trade show floor. I was very curious in your all's approach in the talking about stopping the barn blindness or blinders to BRD.
Yes. BRD, of course, stands for bovine respiratory disease. It's a complex involved. A common name or an older term was referred to as shipping fever pneumonia. And there's three kind of major components involved in that. Generally, there's respiratory viruses that can either damage the normal defense mechanisms or suppress the immune system. There's primarily bacteria or other microorganisms that normally reside in what they call the nasal pharynx or the back of the throat, in which it's normal inhabitants. And then the third major component is the stress. And stress, especially the last couple of years, a lot of the countries dealt with drought. And we have not only protein and energy challenges with the feedstuffs or lack of feedstuffs, but also even with the micro minerals such as copper and zinc and selenium and manganese and probably even some interferences in which these little micro minerals are involved in the normal immune system. So one of the things that's really nice with Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health with our company is, as others, we really try to look at a preventive focus. And part of that, of course, involves from the medical perspective, preventive health programs to try to vaccinate the animals in a group or a population so that we elevate the level of immunity in that group of animals so that if they are challenged, that hopefully they will be able to respond rapidly with minimizing the severity of clinical signs or decreasing the death loss of animals, and also work with management and everything. Another big component involved in this is, and a lot of people don't realize, is other management things such as controlling internal parasites, which actually will kind of shift the way the immune system is able to respond. So that's another big component. And then, of course, management working, different approaches to try to minimize stress and even understand the risk category of the calves coming in or, moving from one phase of production to another. We've done some recent research in the last few years looking at, effectiveness of vaccines and preventing disease and how to incorporate our products into the different protocols or health programs for those farmers and ranchers, and also providing data for veterinarians to make those recommendations based on evidence. So yes, the advancements in technology and the understanding of how to incorporate these products into these preventive health programs is very important in everything.
What's different this year in relation to BRD than what we've seen in maybe past years? Is it the stress? stress on the immune system from drought and things like that that has created maybe a little less, what would you say, health push with cattle entering the feedlot or...
And let me ask you a quick question. Are you referring to feedlot cattle coming in or are you referring to even summer pneumonia cases or...
Feeder cattle going into the feedlot on arrival.
Yes, a lot of those situations are related to the past stressors in the environment of those calves. And even one of the stressors that we do know of is stress on that female in the last half or especially the last third of pregnancy, and that is referred to as fetal programming. We know that if that female is stressed, that, you know, bred heifer or bred cow, it can affect the calf. The other thing that's very, very important is that first milk, referred to as colostrum, that allows some passive immune protection to that young baby, for a few months or so, while its immune system starts to get exposed and recognized to some of these potential disease-causing agents. So it's not only stress on the females through the past couple of winters have been very, very severe in certain parts of the country, along with the drought, the quality of water, and some of those calves just did not get adequate colostrum when they were born. And really that needs to be within the first few hours of life. And we know that those animals, that if they don't get enough colostrum, as we were referring to, that they can be over three times more likely to have an illness in a feedlot type of a setting compared to those calves that receive adequate amount of colostrum. So yes, there's environmental stressors such as the drought, the weather conditions, and some of it, I mean, we don't want to also forget about, a lot of times we think of winters being cold and snow and blizzards and mud and ice. Don't forget we have some other weather events such as wildfires, we have hurricanes and tornadoes and things like that. So we just have to recognize those potential stressors that can affect the outcome of those animals.
What are you seeing as far as trends with calves coming into the feedlot? Are buying trends, you know, are buyers more sensitive to the health protocols and the management systems before they buy?
There are several situations, and it kind of depends upon the particular feed yard or the management of those operations, how they're approaching it. I think that most people recognize that if those calves have a preventive health program and are preconditioned prior, generally the health of those animals will be better and hence the performance. However, in some situations, the availability of that particular type of an animal is just not available. It's unavailable. So therefore, they have to go ahead and maybe acquire or purchase calves that may not meet that particular set of criteria, and therefore those animals will be at higher risk of potentially developing BRD or bovine respiratory disease.
Okay, perfect scenario. How would you set those calves up to succeed?
I guess ideally is, of course, it comes to, comes all the way back, I guess, to genetic selection and breeding and proper body condition and proper vaccination programs and deworming to those females prior to even being bred. And then, of course, managing during that pregnancy period of time or gestation period, those females, and then trying to make sure that, you know, we have an opportunity for those calves to get up and nurse and acquire that colostrum. And then ideally, once that calf is on the ground, so to speak, then incorporate, and we always recommend, you know, work with your veterinarian to develop a preventive health program customized to your particular operation. also to maybe even start in. And if those females are set up properly in a certain type of vaccination program, then we can go ahead and start vaccinating those calves at early processing or branding time, quotes around branding time, around 2 to 3 months of age, vaccinating them with vaccine against the common respiratory viruses. Probably even other vaccines may need to be, such as pink eye or clostridial bacterium / toxoid, referred to commonly as a blackleg shot. And then, of course, deworming depending upon the operation. And then again, even at weaning time, and try to have a situation where weaning is minimal stress to those calves. And there's different type of approaches for that. And then again, vaccinating at that particular time. And basically, I think the one approach is get that calf prepared for where it is going, not necessarily where it is coming from. It is a good thought process.
So, do you have new technologies on the vaccine front or the
new research?
We've got a lot of new research, and our company is always has a research and development group or division, and they're always looking at other technologies. And again, we're globally the largest family-owned business in animal health, but also we deal with all species. So they even look at technology in other species to potentially come from cattle or vice versa. One nice thing is, as Abby commented on, we are still doing a lot of research on our major products to find out where is the best fit, and are we learning anything else? Have things changed out in the environment or within the population of not only animals, but the potential pathogens referred to as disease-causing agents? So we're trying to continually learn and apply and do research on a regular basis so that we're provide data and evidence for veterinarians to be better at their recommendations of incorporating the products, but also give not only our group, but also farmers and ranchers more confidence in our products that fit in and perform well in their operations.
Any new findings that are relevant to cow-calf feedlot audiences?
The biggest thing right now is respiratory disease and trying to manage through what we're dealing with in the last couple of years with the stress on those calves, and not only identifying but treating and even trying to prevent the disease prior, specifically related to respiratory disease.
Our team also had the opportunity to visit with Dave Ciclocha with Merck. Here's what he had to say regarding managing your herd for disease prevention.
We've had a lot of discussion on bovine respiratory disease, and it seems to be a common theme with several companies and several feedlots here at the National Cattlemen's Convention. Can you walk through some maybe current trends on what's happening out there in the feedlots? And I know I've heard some discussion that some drought stress on some cows may have actually wound up be showing up as more bovine respiratory disease in feedlots right now.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Of course, BRD has always been a headache for feed yards and cow-calf operations for that matter, but you know, we like to think that we're making progress on it, but if we're going to be completely honest with ourselves, we haven't done a very good job of improving. At the very best, we could say maybe we're holding our own, and there are some instances that indicate that maybe we're. That's a very valid point. You know, you've got cows that are under some nutritional stress, and some of them have been under that drought nutritional stress for a couple, 3 years. And so the fetus that she's carrying, the milk that she's producing, the colostrum that cow is producing is probably going to be compromised. And,
but I might want some
and that can carry over through the that animal's, if it's a replacement heifer or a feedlot steer, that those stresses can carry over into their entire productive life cycle. And so we have to watch closely on you know, what we do select as replacements. And I think that's a key thing in building BRD resilience is, you know, for years we've pushed so hard on pursuing performance parameters, you know, average daily gain, weaning weight, feed conversion. How closely have we looked at disease resistance? And disease resistance as a genetic trait, and everything I've read indicates it's not a very highly heritable trait. And so my fear is that if we don't start paying attention to it, we're really going to struggle to try to get that genetic trait of disease resistance back into the cow herd. And so when we select our, for instance, replacement heifers to go back into the cow herd, we probably need to look at, you know, keep a good set of treatment records while we have that, while that heifer is a calf. And anything that required treatment, whether it be for scours or respiratory disease or whatever, might ought to move lower down on your replacement heifer list as far as potential replacement heifer. And then I also think it'd be wise for producers to look at when they go to buy a herd bull to talk to their seed stock supplier and say, hey, which of these bulls have been treated and which ones have not been treated, and try to find the bulls that have never had a treatment in their life, because I think clearly that would indicate that there is some good disease resistance in that animal's genetics.
Those are easily done by calling the veterinarian associated with that herd, as well as the seed stock producer themselves.
Yes,
too.
Yeah.
And that veterinarian would know some area specifics.
Yeah. Yep, veterinarians would, but the seed stock producer himself, to me, should be willing to share that information.
You bet.
If he wants a satisfied customer or repeat customer, that kind of information would be valuable to him. And so I think seed stock producers ought to be more than willing to share that information.
Now, having a period of weather stress like we have had, it's probably one of the reasons why it's a low heritability is because mm-hmm. you have a weather event come through and it can cause management breaks that and disease because of stress. Coming out of the weather events that we have, are we being too hard on the cattle if we try and select those that...
Well, you know, there's an old saying, I'm sure you've heard it, that hard times breed better cattle. And, you know, having to cull cows because of a drought is never a good thing. But I think producers need to do their best to make it a good thing, in that especially if they can keep good records and cull off their least productive cows, their cows that produce calves that are more prone to having some sort of disease issue. I think that when it turns around and we get back to normal precipitation and normal pastures, we can really hit the ground running with a high quality herd to keep some replacements out of and do well. So yeah, I think with every problem I've always felt comes an opportunity, and that would, to me, would be one of the major opportunities we have when we're trying to deal with the problem of drought, is improve that cow herd. And there's nothing like good records to help us make some of those culling decisions and keeping decisions.
Bring them on, we're ready.
So genetics is one of the first ways to increase our BRD resiliency.
Yep.
And I would assume that management angle makes up one of the next.
Yep, absolutely. And I think, you know, we could, vaccinations, I think, is a good management tool, clearly. But just good old-fashioned animal husbandry. What are we doing to keep those cattle comfortable and as low stress as possible? You know, there's several ways we can wean calves at our lower stress. There's the fence line weaning system, which has always intrigued me, and the people that do it right. A lot of times they'll tell you there's no better way to wean calves than the fence line system. And my background, of course, is in feed yards, and one of the things I've spent most of my career in Western Kansas, and it's typically very dry out there. That's part of the reason the feedlots are out there. And I think from a feed yard perspective, we've gotten away from bedding cattle. There's always a dry place to lay, or most of the time there is. So if the calf wants to lay down, he's got a dry spot. But one thing I learned, I started bedding some calves from time to time, and it was so interesting how all those cattle, even though they had dry places to lay down all over the pen, if we had a third of the pen bedded, that's where they would go, and everything would be laying down there. If they weren't there, they were standing up. And so I know cattle appreciate bedding, and that's just another way to reduce stress. Good quality cattle handling is a way to reduce stress, and the more we can reduce stress, the better they are going to respond to our vaccines. And if we have to treat them, they're going to respond to treatments better. And so a good vaccination protocol along with that is such a top key. From a feed yard perspective, there's vaccinations, and then there's a preconditioning program. And a preconditioning program includes weaning those calves for a minimum of 45 days. My preference is 60. And if those calves can come off that truck into the feed yard and know what a water tank is and know what a feed bunk is, half the battle is won. And feed yards are some of the data that Merck has access to with Superior Livestock indicates that indeed there is a financial benefit to the producer if calves are preconditioned. The biggest issue there is if you a small herd of probably 30 or less cows, if they're going to wean their calves for 60 days, that adds a chore to their day. They're going to have to either possibly build a pen to hold the calves in, and some feed bunks and a feed truck or feed wagon to feed those cattle. So I think we're still going to have calves that aren't truly preconditioned, but I think there might be some ways for some neighbors to work together too, that on those smaller herds to precondition cattle. So
for someone who would be considering, and some of the surveys that we've done among our breeders who tend to be on the more management side than they are under management, but 50% of those would send calves directly to for sale after they wean.
Yeah.
For those people who are thinking about a preconditioning program, you say you need a pen to put the calves in. Any recommendations on that pen as far as size allocation, space allocation?
Like we talked earlier, in Western Kansas, it's very dry, so the space allocation, it would be different than it would be for Missouri, for example.
Sure.
And so by virtue of that, I really hate to say this is going to be the perfect size.
Right.
It just kind of depends on the precipitation in the area. And I think most of your readers could probably probably reach out to their local extension office and get a much better estimate of square footage per animal than I could, because it can vary so much.
When they're looking at, say, preconditioning that calf for 45 to 60 days and thinking, okay, how much feed am I going to have on hand? How much is that calf going to eat a day?
Basically, you could probably count on 2.5 to 3% of their body weight on a daily basis. It's probably the good rule of thumb.
And what other things should they consider as they're going into that preconditioning?
Well, I think the primary thing is if you're capable of doing it, if you can, of course. Most people, they have their calving season, and then before they turn out to grass, they get the calves in and vaccinate them, and then kind of they're out for the summer. And they would, I truly believe they would provide themselves big dividends if they would actually get the calves in and wean them or vaccinate them about 2 weeks before their actual weaning date. And give that previous vaccination they had at grass turnout a little bit of a boost and give the calves time to recover from that, so they're not feeling the stress of the vaccination along with losing their mama at the same time. It'll help them ease into that weaning phase.
Is there a benefit that to having that vaccination program third-party documented as you go to market?
I think so, yeah. We've all heard the story of the cattle run into the ring and the auctioneer says, yeah, the seller of these calves is right here in the ring. Pete, have they had all their shots? Yep, they've had all their shots. And that doesn't carry a lot of weight.
No.
So, yeah, having someone that can, as you say, a somewhat disinterested third party that can sign an affidavit that says, yes, these calves receive these vaccinations and on these dates and that they were weaned for X amount of days, all those things, I think could provide a huge benefit to the seller.
We'll go back through your application. So with calves that are headed to the feedlot, do you have a common vaccination protocol that you recommend that would be kind of a global protocol?
Well, as far as are you talking on the feedlot end or on the producer end?
For the producer end, who is looking to, if it's third party validated, what kind of protocol is a good one?
Yeah. My suggestion would be they need to be properly vaccinated for the clostridials.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is there has to be two rounds of those clostridial vaccines are killed vaccine, and there has to be two rounds of those given within 2 to 4 weeks of each other, typically. And when I say clostridials, it'd be like Vision 7 would be a product that Merck makes that is a clostridial vaccination. But if you only give one of those, if you only give one shot of a clostridial and never give another one, they're not protected against the clostridials.
And when we're giving them clostridials, we're protecting against blackleg, we're protecting against
enterotoxemia. You can even tetanus. Tetanus is a clostridial bacteria. Some vaccines include tetanus, some don't. So if you're concerned about tetanus, if you're banding the calves or castrating the calves at that time, then you better make sure that your clostridial vaccine does have tetanus. And I see this commonly done, is there's a lot of people that band castrate or knife castrate calves and give the tetanus vaccine on the same day. You cannot expect that vaccine to work, protecting from tetanus. That has to be done ahead of time as well. But a very basic one, vaccine program would include the clostridials, a five-way modified live viral vaccine along with Pasteurella and Mannheimia. And that would be just the basics. And I would strongly encourage anyone who reads this or listens to this to consult with your local veterinarian and design a program with them. But I'd say there's a 99.9% chance that the vaccines I've just listed will definitely be on there, on any veterinarian's list. So.
And those viral vaccines, those are protecting, the modified live virus vaccines, they're protecting against the pneumonias and the shipping fever.
They're called a five-way modified live because it has IBR, PI3, bovine respiratory syncytial virus, or BRSV, and then two types of BVD.
Okay.
And so that makes the five, and then and most of them, like Merck makes a product called Vista 5, mm-hmm. And that those are the five viruses in that. And then Merck also makes one that's called Vista Once. It's basically Vista 5 with a virulent live culture of Mannheimia and Pasteurella, so you'd get those two bugs covered as well. And the Vista Once, product is the only one that has a live culture of Pasteurella and Mannheimia in it. So, but yeah, that would be the bare bones of preconditioning program. Just the clostridials and a five-way modified live, and on top of that, I'm sure you'd want to consider deworming, especially if you are gonna truly precondition those calves. It's gonna improve their feed conversion, their gain. Deworming those cattle, as well as you might want to consider an implant at that time as well.
It was right when that was the transition. Graceland, and there was.
And for the cow calf producer, that would be a benefit to him for those 45 to 60 days.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's some old data that I'm going to say I read in the mid 90s, probably, that if you're going to have cattle for as little as 45 days, an implant will pay off.
Okay.
And so, and the other thing, as far as the cow calf producer is concerned, is we don't take enough advantage of implants at the cow calf level. I see radio ads or hear radio ads that. Tom Peterson is bringing in 200 head of his calves. They've been weaned and they have never had an implant, and that's like a marketing chip. And the fact of the matter is, it really does nothing. There's a belief out there that the feed yards want calves that have not been implanted, and I've been in the feed yards the vast majority of my career, helped make marketing decisions, and I have never heard a feed yard tell their order buyer to pay X amount more for calves that have not been implanted. And so the cow-calf producer has given away 20 to 25 pounds of weaning weight by not implanting his calves, and he's receiving no benefit for it.
So on producers who are saving their own replacement heifers, would you implant those replacement heifers as well?
There are the true implants that are labeled for suckling calves really have minimal effect on reproductive performance. But if a producer is the least bit concerned about it, then I just say don't implant or anything that you might think you might keep as a replacement heifer. But the data we have indicates that it's like less than a 1% effect on reproductive performance in those heifers.
Okay.
If they were to be implanted twice, that might have an effect. But a single suckling calf implant would have virtually no effect.
Other things that we need to consider to keep those calves at their peak performance and able to resist the bugs.
Yep, yep. Yeah, we can do a lot. And again, I've spent a lot of my career focusing on animal welfare aspects, and I truly believe that every time we see a sick calf, we get him in that chute to treat him, we stop and ask ourselves, is there anything I could have done different management-wise to have prevented this situation? And if we start looking for those opportunities, I think over time it will really pay off.
Now, in your position as a technical vet, do you have the opportunity to go in and kind of do a problem solving for a feedlot that had had a problem? And to kind of figure out the underlying causes for that problem.
Technically, I think we're probably presented with those opportunities very frequently. When we go into those situations, we always want to include the feed yard's consulting veterinarian in the situation, just so we can work together. Because, you know, as a technical services veterinarian, I don't know the true internal workings of each feed yard like a consulting vet would, and so there's some insights that can be gained there, and of course there's product insights that the technical services veterinarians can share with the consulting veterinarian, and so it makes a really good and especially if you can solve the problem, a fun team effort to solve those problems.
With your experience, what's the most common cause of an outbreak?
Mismanagement. Because we think about how these calves, non-preconditioned calves, they're pulled off their mamas, and so let's say that they're pulled off their mamas and hauled to the sale barn on Monday. They're put through the sale barn. They're sorted up for size, and so even if it's a small group, there's going to be some sorting that goes on. And that adds stress. So they don't know where their mom is. They got a trailer ride. They get to the sale barn. They're sorted. And so there's more stress. They're putting pens next to calves that they've never seen before. So they're exposed to more disease. Then they're put through a sale ring, and of course most livestock auctions like their keep their buyers interested, so they make things happen pretty fast.
So there's happened out in the pasture.
Yeah, so they get put in the sale ring, and the auctioneer's crying, and bids are being taken, and those calves are nervous, and then they're put out into the buyer's pens out on the other side of the sale barn, probably put in with other calves that from other ranches that buyer has purchased already. And then that buyer might have a collection center where he loads all those calves up and takes them home. He might have other buyers that work for him that are at other sale barns bringing in more calves from more ranches, and they sort them up there again, and more stress. And when they get a load-sized lot put together that's kind of uniform, they put them on a truck and haul them 1,000 miles to a feed yard. And you think about that entire process, and a lot of times if those calves are taken off the home farm on Monday, they're in a feed yard on Wednesday or Thursday. And think about all the changes that calf has gone through in that time. And there's just a lot of things that we could have done management-wise that could have alleviated all that. And that's why I say mismanagement.
Anything else that we haven't talked about nutrition.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and again, nutrition to me starts at the cow level, making sure that cows in good body condition scores for two reasons. One of them being to be able to produce good quality colostrum. And the other thing is that cow's going to be able to breed back better if she's in good condition at the time of calving. It's awful hard to put weight on a cow when she's starting to milk and starting to get her uterus back in shape. And so trying to add weight at that point is not cost effective. Really the best time to add weight to improve the body condition of your cows is after the calf is weaned and before that third trimester of pregnancy. That's probably the most cost effective time to improve that body condition. And then, of course, making sure that the cows, and by virtue of that, the calves, have good mineral supply through the summer as they're grazing and putting those good minerals through the milk to that calf, and good, healthy, robust calf to wean. And they talk about in these drought situations, fetal programming, and that is the nutrition is a huge component of fetal programming. And like I say, if that occurs, that could affect that fetus for the rest of its life, rest of its performance life, whether it's a feedlot steer or a replacement heifer to the cow herd.
We're really finding that affects the fetus a lot longer into life than what we
imagined. Yep. And then, of course, the colostrum. A lot of times we take those. We see a calf born without any difficulties, and we see him up in nursing, and we take for granted that they got their colostrum. To me, you can't overfeed colostrum, and if there's any question whether a calf got colostrum in the preferably within the first 6 hours of being born, you either need to supplement that with a commercial colostrum product or get that cow in, milk her out, and tube feed to that calf, because that'll have a huge impact on that calf's future performance as well.
Can you give him a calf a supplement if he's already had some? Can it do any harm?
No, he won't do any. You know, when I was a kid, I remember the rule was they need to get colostrum within the first 24 hours, and it just slowly tightened down to you're going to get a lot more benefit if you can get it in within the first 6 hours of life.
Listeners, for more information on making Angus work for you, check out the Angus Beef Bulletin and the Angus Beef Bulletin Extra. You can subscribe to both publications in the show notes. If you have questions or comments, let us know at abbeditorial@angus.org. And we would appreciate it if you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and share this episode with any other profit-minded cattlemen. Thanks for listening. This has been Angus at Work.